This is planet Earth. You're looking at planet Earth. Bop, 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 bop. This is planet Earth.
Welcome to episode 29 of our Planet Earth series, in which we look at our home planet. Enrico Palermo is the head of the Australian Space Agency, which is based in Adelaide. Speaking at the Space Industry Association late last year, he spoke about the Australian Earth Science Roadmap. This is a plan for how Australia is going to use satellites to observe the Earth. So, let's go to Enrico Palermo.
One of the areas that ticks all of those boxes I just mentioned is Earth observation from space. That is, using data acquired by satellites to provide insights into the Earth's physical, chemical, and biological processes. Earth observation data has a meaningful impact on our lives every day in ways that many people around the nation would not realise. I know I have a captive audience here. But Earth observation, it is a critical resource for emergency services fighting our bushfires and responding to floods. It helps us grow our understanding of meteorology and better forecast weather events, including natural disasters. Vital information for our aviation and shipping industries. By tracking crop health and moisture levels, it helps our farmers to manage their land, getting better yields and more targeted application of fertilisers, for example. It helps us manage our environment. Using Earth observation to monitor and study our water quality and quantity and our biodiversity. And it is central to the defence and national security of our nation. So today, it's with great pleasure and excitement that the agency proudly releases our Earth Observation from Space Roadmap. This is the second in the series of roadmaps the agency is delivering, one for each priority area in the Civil Space Strategy. We've developed with the support of many people in this room and around the nation from industry, government, and the research community. This roadmap outlines a 10-year plan, a 10-year vision and strategic direction to support growth of the Australian space sector for Earth observation. It provides a map for industry to coordinate and build world-leading capabilities and technologies that supports jobs and critical services into the future. The roadmap includes five focus segments that are areas of significant opportunity for Australia. Development pathways and facilitating measures for each focus segment are identified. To help build national heritage and access secure data, there are also new opportunities for industry to expand Earth observation satellite design and manufacturing activities. This roadmap is now published on our website space.gov.au. And you'll also be accessible through our social media channels.
And that was Enrico Palermo, the head of the Australian Space Agency in Adelaide. Now, Karen St. Germain is the director of the Earth Science Division at NASA headquarters in Washington, D.C. She spoke at the American Geophysical Union in December last year.
Hello, everyone. My name is Karen St. Germain, and I'm the Director of Earth Science for NASA. It's terrific to be with you today talking about our upcoming missions. So often when people think of NASA, of course, they think of human exploration or planetary science or astrophysics. They might not think of NASA's using the unique vantage point of space to look back at our home planet. But of course, NASA has been studying our home planet for decades now, and it's largely because of NASA satellites that we really do have an understanding of how our climate is changing on Earth. And we know that that change is accelerating as in ways that we haven't seen before. And because of that change, decision makers at every level need information and actionable science, whether it's at the local level, concerned about transportation issues, to sunny day flooding, to agricultural issues, and so forth. NASA is, this is a multi-agency, multi-stakeholder enterprise, and NASA has a very unique role for at least two reasons. One is that NASA has the only Earth system science program that is end-to-end, from investing in technology to flight missions to funding discovery through research and analysis, to all the way to end-user applications that we often build in partnership with other agencies, the private sector, or nonprofits. So we're the only agency that has this kind of end-to-end focus on Earth science. But also, because NASA builds all of the U.S. Assets in civil space. So today we have a fleet of 23 missions flying, looking back at our Earth. So we have an enormous fleet looking at the atmosphere, the land, the ice, and the oceans, studying the entire Earth system. And even as we are flying and building these missions today and in the next, we're also looking to the future beyond these missions. As we look even beyond the missions that are flying today or launching tomorrow, and looking toward those systems that are in planning right now, NASA is planning to launch the Earth System Observatory by the end of the decade to meet the needs in future decades. The Earth System Observatory is a fleet of satellite missions that are designed to address the most urgent questions as identified by our National Academy of Science. And the five core missions will again look at clouds, convection and precipitation, in other words, the atmosphere and aerosols. They'll look at the surface of the Earth, both the biology and the deformation and change, as well as what's going on with large-scale mass redistribution, which could be anything from glacial melt to movement of water and underground aquifers. But how we operate this observatory is just as important as what we build. We're also going to augment the core observatory with a series of competed missions that will bring innovation and additional observations to the observatory depicted here. And this will all be a competed layer, which we hope to be able to start this year. Beyond what we build is what we then do with the data, and the urgency of the demand for actionable information drives us to do the science with these missions in ways that we never have before, in full partnership with both U.S. government agencies and partners in the commercial sector, as well as international partners. And we're doing this all through open science. And the idea there is to put the data, the models, the code, all out into an open ecosystem to lower the barriers to participate in the science with us. We're doing this because we think that will accelerate the pace of discovery, as well as the speed at which we're able to uptake science and make it useful to decision makers. So we are really excited to talk to you today for the rest of this session about the missions that will be launching just in the next year. They're part of this broader enterprise that is bringing science to bear for decision makers around the country and around the world. Thank you.
Cedric David is the Supervisor of Water and Ecosystems Group at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, and he has these thoughts on why study the Earth from space.
Now, it just so happens that our solar system is part of that, and our home planet is Planet A, is part of the solar system, and, you know, as far as we know, that's the only place where we can live right now. And what's great about our ability to ship satellites in orbit around the Earth and basically take Earth selfies is that they bring a global view, the big picture of very important processes happening on the Earth. And so, you know, in our exploration of the universe and beyond, NASA has the ability to basically look back at the Earth, and we learn a tremendous amount while doing that. And that helps us take care of Plan A. You know, we don't have a Plan B for where we're going to be. And so it's incredibly important for NASA to look back at the Earth.
88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Planet Earth is blue.
Gavin Schmidt is the climate scientist and director at the Goddard Institute for Space Studies. The public affairs people at the Goddard Space Flight Center asked him a series of questions, and I'm going to read the questions here in the studio, and Gavin Schmidt will answer. So, Gavin, last year we saw quite a few weather-related disasters and extreme events. Now, these included droughts, fires, and hurricanes. Now, how do changing global temperatures affect those extremes?
So we're now in a situation where every year is going to be seeing extremes that have had a contribution from that global warming, because this is the seventh year in a row that the temperatures have been more than about 2 degrees Fahrenheit above the late 19th century. And that's enough to be having an effect on daily weather. So we're seeing things like the Pacific Northwest heat wave setting record temperatures across that whole region. We're seeing marine heat waves. We're seeing intense rainfall. All of these things are coming, and they're going to be. We're seeing them every year because we are now in a globally warmed world.
How else do changes to Earth's global temperatures affect us?
So obviously, nobody really lives in the global average temperature. But what we've seen is that the changes in that measure are so large now that we're seeing it in local and regional temperature changes, and we're seeing it in local and temperature weather events. And so the rainfall, when it rains, it's raining more intensely. We're seeing that everywhere, even at a local scale. We're seeing the strength and duration of heat waves increasing everywhere, even on a local scale. We're seeing the impacts of that global warming temperature and the melting ice impacting sea level, and that's impacting coastal flooding rates everywhere, pretty much along the coast, particularly on the East Coast, which is a hotspot for sea level rise. And so the changes that we've seen are now large enough that we can detect them where we are. We don't need to just be looking at these kind of big aggregate global measures to see the changes that we have wrought.
How do satellites help us understand our climate and weather?
Oh, so Landsat 9 is the latest in an almost 50-year series of measurements, starting way back in the 1970s. And that gives us a unique view of the surface and the changes on the surface, a lot of which are related to climate change. So we can use the Landsat data to go back and look at glaciers retreating over time, changes in stream flow, changes in lakes, changes in fire. We can see those scars, we can see those marks, those fingerprints in the landscape that we can now document over those many decades. And so we can see those changes. The overall monitoring of the climate system from satellite is absolutely essential for us, not just to know how things are changing, but why things are changing. Looking at the processes, looking at the clouds, looking at the water vapor, looking at what the impacts are on ozone. All of those things are being looked at from space using NASA instruments and our international partners, and they're giving us a very, very clear picture of what's happening throughout the whole system. It's not just that the surface is warming. The changes are being seen everywhere, and those changes have a unique fingerprint that tells us that this is basically due to our activities.
In the United States, both NASA and NOAA have recently released the global temperature data for 2021. Where does last year rank in the temperature record?
Last year was the sixth warmest year on record, which is slightly down from the warmest year on record that we had last year. But it's just part of the ups and downs of what's going on in the climate system. But the long-term trends are very, very clearly still up.
And what do we expect to see in future heat and global events?
Well, unfortunately, it's more of the same. We're going to see greater levels of sea level rise. We're going to see more heat waves. We're going to see more intense precipitation. We're going to see more intense storms in tropical cyclones, in hurricanes in the Atlantic. We're going to see shifts north of the storm tracks. We're going to see decreases even more in the Arctic sea ice. We're going to see in continued mass loss from Greenland and West Antarctica. And so these are the things that we predicted would happen, you know, decades ago, and now they are happening, and we're just anticipating that they're going to happen more and more rapidly if we don't change the trajectory that the planet is on.
In 1988, Dr. James Hansen, then director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, stood before the U.S. Senate and testified that
global warming has reached a level such that we can ascribe with a high degree of confidence a cause and effect relationship between the greenhouse effect and observed warming. It is already happening now. This last year, 2021, comes in as the sixth warmest year on record, and it continues this large, long-term warming that Jim Hansen was detecting even in 1988. And in 1988, that was also a globally warmest year, but now that ranks only 28th in the ranking. And so the warming that we've had since Jim Hansen's testimony has been dramatic and totally vindicates the concern and the warnings that he put out at that time.
The Goddard Institute for Space Studies, or GISS for short, maintains NASA's record of Earth's surface temperature, called GISTEMP, that shows a clear and unequivocal increase in our planet's temperature. GISTEMP stretches from 1880, long before NASA existed, until the present day. Now, when you think of NASA, you probably think of, well, space, right? And we do lots of work studying Earth from above. But the GISTEMP record is actually built from the ground up. We collect measurements taken from weather stations, Antarctic research stations, and ships and ocean buoys all around the planet to understand what temperature changes look like globally. And why does the record start in 1880? That's the earliest period that we have sufficiently reliable measurements from ships and weather stations in enough places to be confident in the global record. Interestingly, it's also shortly after the time we call the Industrial Revolution, when humans started putting significant amounts of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. But we'll get back to that later.
There are millions of measurements over the last 140 odd years. We put those together. We're using data from literally tens of thousands of different stations around the world. We use the information that's there to create a global picture of what's happening. And that gives us a very accurate estimate of how any year ranks, or what the anomaly is for any one year compared to what happened in the 19th century or what happened in the middle of the 20th century.
So we have our statistical reconstruction of Earth's recent climate, but in research science, we like to check our work. There are a couple ways we can do this. First of all, teamwork. Our colleagues at NOAA and at other agencies and universities around the world also create their own records, and we can line them up side by side and see just how closely they align. Everyone's independent climate records show the same thing. Earth is warming significantly and rapidly. And here at NASA, we have an even cooler way to check our work. Space. Right now, we have more than 24 satellites dedicated just to studying our planet. Satellites can take measurements of the entire planet and line them up with our estimate of global temperature change. And sure enough, they also match. Our measurements from space match up well with what our analysis tells us. Earth's climate is warming. The next big question, why is our planet warming? Well, let's jump back to the Industrial Revolution. The release of carbon, mostly carbon dioxide, from human activities like driving cars, flying planes, and industrial burning of fossil fuels is responsible for the majority of climate change. Carbon exists in stores underground as oil, gas, and coal. When we burn it, we release it into our atmosphere, where it traps excess heat coming from the sun, raising the temperature. We've known for more than a century that carbon dioxide added to our atmosphere traps additional heat and is a major contributor to the greenhouse effect. So we can also track the concentration of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, the primary cause of the current climate change. Both from space, using NASA satellites like the Orbiting Carbon Observatories 2 and 3, and from the ground. If you've heard of the Keeling Curve, you're familiar with one of these records. Researchers have been taking daily measurements of atmospheric carbon dioxide from Mauna Loa, Hawaii, since the 1950s. From space and the ground, the signal is clear. There's a lot more carbon in the atmosphere than there used to be. Other things have changed too. We've chopped down tropical forests, caused the ozone hole, and filled the air with soot, smog, and other kinds of air pollution. And this is on top of natural variations caused by the dynamics of the ocean, or volcanoes, or variations in the sun's activity. And so we can ask whether it's human activities warming our planet. At NASA, we have some big and powerful computers, able to make 6.8 trillion calculations per second. We put these huge supercomputers to work to recreate Earth's climate. So we have thousands of ideas of what could naturally cause climate change. We have 4 billion years of history where nearly anything and everything you could imagine has impacted Earth's climate. But each of these events has their own distinct fingerprint, which we can identify, a pattern of behavior with natural variability. Using supercomputers, we can run simulations of natural climate drivers, solar energy changes, wobbles in Earth's orbits, ocean turnover, volcanic eruptions, and we can run simulations of human effects. And what we've seen is...
it's us. There's no way around it. Looking at the evidence, we're the force that's enacting these changes. I am so proud of our ability to understand the climate, but I'm terrified of what we've found.
But it's not just the causes of climate change. It's also the effects. Because it's not just about knowing why our planet is warming. It's also about understanding and preparing for the effects of added warmth.
Measurement of global average temperatures is so important because it's one of the most direct indicators of Earth's changing climate. But the Earth is really a system of environmental systems, land, ocean, atmosphere, and ice, and changes in one system impact the others. Our oceans are our first line of defense in climate change because they absorb so much of the extra trapped energy in the Earth system.
We are seeing the impacts of climate change now. Now we know that as our climate warms, wet areas are getting wetter and dry areas are getting drier. For example, we see more intense snowstorms. We see slower hurricanes that are causing more precipitation that inundate land. And we have more extreme precipitation in the form of atmospheric rivers that come from the Pacific and reach our west coast.
The oceans are absorbing a large amount of heat because of climate change. And once that heat is in the ocean, it actually travels all around the planet because of the ocean currents. And that has impacts on local weather and long-term climate.
As the planet warms, it's not just the ocean that's warming, it's also the ice that sits in the ocean and on land. The ice on land being warmed increases melting, which is increasing freshwater input into the polar oceans and causing sea levels to rise across the globe.
So as the climate is changing, we really are seeing a lot of changes to the environment up in the Arctic. We're seeing more permafrost thaw when it's warmer up there. The warmer air temperature can lead to warmer ground temperature, and we get that thawing of that permafrost layer.
We're finding that the fire season is being exacerbated by longer periods of drought and decreased snowfall.
Knowing that our climate is changing due to human activities means that we know how to lessen the effects of future warming. And knowing how we know what causes climate change confirms that our efforts would be meaningful. The situation is serious, but it's not hopeless. Together, we can decide to make a better choice.
That feature for the space show, courtesy of the Goddard Space Flight Center.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless.